Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there, thanks for joining me. On this show, say goodbye to the stale, same old, self-sabotaging, counterproductive, and unhealthy routines that keep us stuck. We are adopting good ones and breaking bad ones. Yep, it's that simple. Well, simple to say it, but every good plan is just a good plan without action. So, get ready to take action. Gone are the days of endless excuses and pathetic procrastination. We are about to give ourselves a swift kick in the shoulda, woulda, coulda, and get busy. Tired of wanting to get somewhere but never feeling forward momentum? Are you ready to try something new? Think about your day, week, month, or year. How much of your time is spent on autopilot? You know, just aimlessly going through the motions? Routines can be comforting because of their consistent nature, but they can also be habitual, rarely challenged. Well, it's just the way it's always been. I don't know why I do it. I just do it. How many times do you say, I'm not even sure what I did today or even this week? The scientific community suggests that we make about 35,000 decisions a day. Our brain can't possibly take the time to consider every single thing we do. Imagine if you had to remember to get dressed every day. But we probably need to explore this concept from a few angles. Not being present or intentional, living in denial, and resistant to change. I can already gather that there won't be an easy dissection between them, but some combo of all three. Noelle Bloom puts things in perspective with 10 signs you're living on autopilot from an article she wrote for success.com. Your brain is on your side, not out to get you. Whenever it can, though, your brain will kick into automatic decision-making gear to save energy, freeing up your conscious mind to work on other mentally taxing things. Your ability to think about what's not happening at any given moment is a cognitive achievement that makes life easier. However, when this automatic feature starts slipping into other areas of your life that need more forethought, it comes at an emotional cost, your happiness. Autopilot has gone from being an evolutionary projection mechanism that stops our brains from overloading to our default mode of operating, whereby sleepwalking into our choices, says Dr. Williamson. Another study done by two Harvard University psychologists, Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert, author of Stumbling on Happiness, revealed that the average person spends about half, 47%, of their waking hours doing what they call mind wandering. You heard me right, half. Mind wandering is when you spend time thinking about what isn't going on. They found that when people let their minds wander, whether it's thinking about events from the past, present, or future, it makes them unhappy. The problem with living on autopilot is that it can leave you sleepwalking through life's pivotal moments, making it difficult to make intentional decisions about how you want to work and live your life. Instead of making conscious choices about the clothes you wear, the food you eat, the people you spend time with, the things you buy, the work you do, and the places you go, you make decisions on default. Before you know it, you are living your life by default, not by design. Over time, these small mindless decisions can prevent you from reaching your definition of success. Want to know if you're living your life on autopilot? Here are 10 signs you are. Number one, you dread the day ahead. You wake up and you dread the day because there's nothing you're really looking forward to. You don't feel excited or inspired to get the day started because you have a pretty good idea of how it will go. Number two, your daily routine is predictable. You could practically tell someone how you'll spend your entire day a month from now. For example, you could tell them exactly where you'll go, what you'll do, who you'll see, and what you'll eat. Number three, you do things without thinking. You take action without stopping to think about what you're doing, how you're doing it, and why you're doing it. Your decisions and actions have become so automatic that it takes little to no thought at all. Number four, you can't seem to put your phone down. You automatically check your phone for updates and mindless scrolling through your emails, social media feeds, any opportunity you get, even though you just checked it. Number five, you stay deep in thought. You constantly catch yourself deep in thought, thinking about things that aren't currently happening when you're doing something else. Basically, you're mentally checked out in la-la land. Number six, you have a difficult time remembering. You're not fully present in the moment, and you don't remember doing activities like driving, eating, or having that conversation you should have remembered. Let's just say you can easily forget the little things and feel mentally mushy at times. Number seven, you can't seem to let go. You do what's familiar even though you know it's not serving you anymore. For example, you keep the same unmotivated, unambitious people around, staying in the same career, holding on to things you've outgrown, living in the same old place, and doing things that don't inspire you because that's just the way it is. Number eight, you're not making meaningful progress. You make little to no meaningful progress towards your goals as days, weeks, and months seem to fly by. You're not focused on what's most important in your life and feel down because of it. Number nine, you say yes way more than you say no. You often agree to things that you don't want to do, then dread the decision after. Instead of carefully considering your options, you've made yes your default answer. For example, you say yes to working late, hosting the family gathering, watching the kids, or going to the party when you'd rather stay home. Number 10, you know there's a better life to be lived. You believe your life could be more joyous, but you feel stuck in your current situations. You know deep down that you've settled in too many areas of your life, and you wish you would have taken action or at least a different path. If most of these signs resonate with you, there's a high probability you're living your life on autopilot. The good thing is that you can get your brain off of autopilot and train it to wander less. This will result in conscious decision making. If you want to turn off the cruise control and create a more joyful and fulfilling life now, you must take action. The first thing you can do is create a life vision so that you're crystal clear on what you want your life to look like. Once you're aware of what you want, you can align your thoughts and actions. Next, you can practice living in the moment and being present. How much time do you spend visualizing about your future? You might think it's fantasizing and have even heard the words, "Get your head out of the clouds," at least at some point in your life. But how are you supposed to get there if you don't see yourself there? Starting now, imagine your life in the next 2 years. Where do you want to be? What are you doing? And what are you not doing? Be specific with the details. Being in a better position, job, money, or family is not a clear enough picture to create motivation. Now, repeat this exercise for years 5, 8, and even 10. Journal about it. Create some vision boards like Pinterest to gather visual cues. Whatever helps put you clearly in the scenario. Research has shown that we're happiest when our thoughts and actions are aligned. How you spend your day doesn't tell you much about how happy you are. Instead, your mental presence is a much better predictor of your happiness. So the next time you're stuck in traffic, talking to someone, walking outside, or eating dinner, take note of what you see, what you hear, and how you feel in the moment. It may seem simple, but so powerful. This will help you be more intentional in all areas of your life, allowing you to live your life by design, not by default. 10 years ago, I started working on breaking bad habits. One by one, it was a personal competition between my reason and my desire. I have really strong willpower if I set my mind to something and really, really want it. I saw these habits as stumbling blocks in the bigger picture. Until I was free and unencumbered, I couldn't get to where I wanted to go and at the pace I wanted to get there. I had to get real with myself and stop hiding behind excuses and false justifications. I'm good at selling myself on almost anything. Bigger picture, does this help me propel my future or keep me where I am? Okay, it has to go. But when you're mindlessly working your way through life, unaware of what is helping and what is hurting your chances of success, you may not even notice a need for change. Once a year, there's a big push to let go of the past and move forward, adopting healthier routines. Eating right, exercising, and cleaning out and purging clutter are some of the top ones that come to mind. But what about our day-to-day mindless routines? Are they creating more resistance than necessary? Nick Wingull shares 6 subtle habits that are sabotaging your happiness. Everybody wants to know what they can do to be happier, right? Aren't we all on the search? We crave some combination of lessons, tricks, inspirations, goals, strategies, life hacks, pills, or even apps that will add more happiness and well-being to our lives. But what if finding happiness is less about what we should add and more about what we should subtract? What if the smarter way to find your happiness is to focus on removing the things that make you unhappy? It's about discovering the things that are making you miserable and doing your best to eliminate them. And more often than not, those things that make us miserable are habits. Subtle but more powerful patterns we've fallen into, maybe even since childhood, that gnaw away at our happiness day after day, month after month, year after year. Here are 6 of the most common habits that could sabotage your happiness and some brief thoughts on how to eliminate them. Number 1, worrying about the future and other people's opinions of you. I think we're all guilty of that. Worrying is the mental habit of trying to solve a problem that either can't be solved or isn't really a problem. It's easy to fall into because it feels protective, like we're at least doing something. It staves off the feeling we hate most of all, helplessness. Worry gives us the illusion of control. But here's the thing. Sometimes we are helpless. Sometimes things are bad or painful or terrifying, and there's nothing we can do about it. Yes, something terrible could happen to you or people you care about in the future. It's true. Some people really, truly, deep down, don't like you very much. Sorry. Worrying about it is a denial of reality. It's a demand that everything be the way you want it. It's an attempt to control what is fundamentally outside of your control. It's expectations gone wild. Hey, stuff happens. People are jerks. Worrying about it won't change things, but it will lead to a lot of anxiety. Work to become more aware of your habit of worry, then question it. Am I productively solving a genuine problem or doing mental hand-wringing? What function does my worry really serve? What benefit does it really give me? Learn to accept the pain of what it is and what might be and let go of your habit of worry and all the anxiety it generates. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Number two, isolating yourself when you're feeling down. Why do you apologize for feeling and expressing sadness? Because we've all been trained since we were kids to control ourselves and mask our emotions before they're unseemly in public. Why are we so ashamed of our emotions that we feel like we need to hide from others, even the people we're closest to? On the contrary, they're a sign that something you're talking about is important and valuable to you. Visible, painful emotions like sadness and fear and frustration help signal the people around you that you're struggling and you could use some support. You don't need coping strategies when you're sad or discouraged or feeling lonely, paralyzed, or helpless. You need people. You need support. You need someone to give you a hug, listen carefully to your story, share a pint of Haagen-Dazs. You get the picture. When we hide our pain and isolate ourselves, we throw away the most powerful antidepressant known to man: loving support from people who care about you. So, while it's totally natural to hide yourself away and isolate when you're feeling in pain or suffering, do the opposite. Reach out. Ask for support. Connect. We are like islands in the sea, separate on the surface, but connected in the deep. That's a quote by William James. Number three, keeping quiet and going with the flow. It's a truism that most people dislike conflict, but that's just because most people don't know that there's a good way to deal with conflict. Most of us hesitate to push back and stand up for ourselves because we're afraid of being perceived as aggressive, pushy, conniving, or rude. And so we default to being passive, accepting, quiet, and generally just go with the flow, which is usually just a euphemism for being a doormat. But there's a middle road between being a passive doormat and an aggressive person, even passive aggressive. You can be assertive. Assertiveness means standing up for your own wants, needs, desires, and values. It means asking for what you want and saying no to what you don't in a respectful, clear, and honest manner. Guess what? Assertiveness is a skill anyone can learn. The road to genuine self-esteem, confidence, and self-respect is assertiveness through the willingness to align your actions with your values, no matter the circumstance. Number four, talking trash to yourself in your head. Everybody has self-talk, that running commentary in your own head about everything from what shoes to wear and why, to what your boss's secretary thinks about your new haircut. It's our inner narrator who constantly describes the story of our life as it unfolds. Unfortunately, many of us, A, are not very aware of our self-talk, and B, have a brutally negative, judgmental style of self-talk. Think about it. If you talk to other people the way you talk to yourself, you'd probably have zero friends, no job, and multiple warrants out for your arrest. The reason we all have such harsh, negative self-talk is that we're taught as children to be tough on yourself. That's the motivating way, best practice to force yourself to be disciplined and get stuff done, right? Even if you're the kind of person who's reasonably disciplined and successful in your pursuits, it's probably despite your negative self-talk, not because of it. So, if negative self-talk isn't motivating, what function does it serve? Nothing good. But it will function to make you depressed, anxious, chronically guilty, and even hopeless. You've had the same self-talk program running in the background of your operating system since you were five. Might be time for an update. Here's a quote by James Allen. He who would be useful, strong, and happy must cease to be a passive receptacle for the negative, beggarly, and impure stream of thought. Number five, trying to manage your stress. The biggest lie we've all been told about chronic stress is that you need to get a better way of managing it. Why is this a lie? Stress management is actually a pretty terrible solution to a problem of chronic stress because, hey, to point out what seems to be so obvious, you're already stressed. Stress management is a band-aid. It's treating the symptoms, which is fine as a last resort, but it's a terrible overall strategy because it distracts us from thinking carefully about the true cause of our stress, the stressors. The stressor is the thing that causes the stress response. If you're constantly stressed, the long-term solution is to fix the original cause of the stress, i.e., the stressor, not the feeling, i.e., the stress response. If you're constantly stressed at work, you could try and work in more deep breathing exercise or spend more time journaling about the things you're grateful for, and maybe your stress level will decrease a little for a time. But that's not going to change the fact that you're terrible at saying no and that you take on way more projects than you should reasonably be able to handle. In other words, feeling stressed at work is the messenger trying to tell you that something about how you work is deeply wrong. Stress management techniques like deep breathing exercise are effectively shooting the messenger. Stress isn't the problem. It's the constant flood of stressors in your life that's making you miserable. Here's another way to think about it. The way we think about chronic stress is like an emergency room where the only treatment option is Tylenol. Gunshot? Here's a Tylenol. Fractured arm? Here's a Tylenol. Heart attack? Here's a Tylenol. Sure, a Tylenol might make you feel a little better in the moment, but it doesn't address the cause of the pain. There's nothing objectively wrong with traditional stress management techniques like deep breathing or mindfulness. The problem is the habit of thinking about chronic stress only in terms of how we feel, our stress response. In reality, the far more important part of the equation is the stressors. That's what's causing the real stress in the first place. We're up to number six. Believing your own thoughts unconditionally. What's so special about your thoughts? Seriously, why do you give over so much respect and authority and meaning to everything that pops into your head? The idea jumped into your head that your coworker thinks you're lazy. So what? Does that mean anything? Is the fact that you had a thought about that idea genuine evidence that it's true? Does it mean you have social anxiety? Is it just another sign that you have low self-esteem and need to get in to see a shrink immediately? No. Maybe they do think you're lazy, but the fact that you had a thought about it doesn't make it any more or less likely. But guess what? If every time a thought like that pops into your mind and you give it tons of attention, exert lots of mental energy over it, and allow it all sorts of deep, weighty meaning, you're teaching your own mind to throw more of those thoughts your way. Cue the vicious cycle of chronic, intrusive thoughts and all the anxiety and distress that goes along with them. Remember, your thoughts aren't special. And a lot of them are actively detrimental if you maintain a habit of always giving them tons of respect and attention. Cultivate a healthy skepticism of your own thoughts. Learn to let them be. You'll be happier for it. The primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but your thoughts about the situation. Be aware of the thoughts that you are thinking, says Eckhart Tolle. All you need to know, Let go of the habit of worry. Let go of the habit of isolation. Let go of the habit of going with the flow. Let go of the habit of trash talking yourself. Let go of the habit of stress management. Let go of the habit of engaging all your thoughts. Let go of the habits keeping you unhappy, and you won't have to find happiness. It will have found you. Oh, if it were that easy just to let go. Like a monkey on your back, we can accept all the reason in the world, but when it comes down to shaking it off, we create yet another justification point that our mind accepts. What happens next? We put off doing anything, waiting for a more acceptable time. Hogwash. You have the power to stop doing anything you don't want to do today, or at least to redirect your energy in a positive, new direction. HBR Patel shares some insight on breaking bad routines, one bad habit at a time, in an article he wrote for Medium. Our routine is aptly shaped by our habits. A perfect planned day may fail to deliver the end result if procrastination is one of your vices. Getting rid of bad habits like that is regarded as one of the most arduous tasks. It takes dedication and patience to overcome those habits, and for that, neuroplasticity will come in handy. Before understanding that, let us look at what habit is from the perspective of neuroscience. Habit is the activity that puts the brain in autopilot mode. The more often you perform an action, the more you strengthen that neural connection. It becomes hardwired, and it's hard to loosen that hardwired connection. It was believed that it's hard to learn, adapt, or change after some age. The concept of fixed mindset ruled the world until the idea of growth mindset was introduced. Hence the sayings, "You can't teach an old dog new tricks." Bad habits are hard to break. Only if they had known about neuroplasticity. So what is it? A term that refers to the ability of the brain to adapt itself or reorganize itself to new changes in the behavior, environment, or other factors by twofold action. Synaptic pruning, deleting the neural connections that are no longer necessary or useful, and strengthening the necessary ones that can help you adapt to change. Age plays a considerable factor in facilitating this neuroplasticity, but not that much that it stops after some age. We know that change is inevitable, and so does our brain, if you insist. One thing to keep in mind and lock into your heart is that process of neuroplasticity takes time. So change demands patience. Everlasting change demands time, while quick changes seldom survive the onslaught of time. This process is the best ammunition that mankind has in its arsenal to conquer the world in every frontier. We see, we think, we adapt, hence we evolve. Neuroplasticity is what helps us adapt and evolve. The brain also takes time to fine-tune itself by synaptic pruning and strengthening the required neural connections that are recently used. So, to say it in a few words, breaking a bad habit is to rewrite your brain. Rewriting those neural connections is what demands dedication and patience. It's like taking the unknown or alternate road for many times until it becomes so familiar that you can walk over it with eyes closed. The same is with the brain. Replace the bad habit with a good one, or to say replace the familiar road with the alternate one. Simple said, then done. But when you're committed to the cause of changing your habits, change is not far. Find the trigger point which helps you to indulge in bad habits, and use that trigger point to take the alternate path. Research shows that it takes 21 or sometimes 60 days to form a new habit, but don't let that research be the reason to skip the forced stimulus of practicing the habit due to overconfidence of mastering it. Motivation helps, and here are some of the quotes that might provide you with the much-needed motivational wave. Ride on it in the initial phase and then pick it up at your own pace. One thing to keep in mind is that everlasting change demands time, while quick change seldom survives the onslaught of time. Target small changes that will amass to greater changes. Believe in the power of compounding. The number of seconds in 5 minutes each day for a month and 2.5 hours for one day in a month might be the same, but the impact that they make is quite different. Consistency pays in the long run if you're patient enough to see the results. Neuroplasticity is the investment you make to break that old and bad habit of yours. Initial gains might be next to invisible, but if you wait long enough for consistent efforts to compound, the ROI would go through the roof. Aristotle sums it up perfectly. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Consider these healthy routines in the place of bad habits. Spend time by yourself exploring your own feelings. Read. Take your mind on a journey of new places, times, and ideas. Create beauty in your space. Make your home a safe and happy place. Make time for the special people in your life. Make space for new friends to become better friends. Challenge old and outdated beliefs in yourself and the world around you. Find ways to give back in a meaningful way, time, attention, and resources. Thanks for sticking with me as we talk about adopting healthy routines and breaking some bad ones. We don't have to wait for the first of the year to start something new. You can do that right now. You know, everybody always says, well, I'll wait till after the holidays, as if the holidays is this magical time just to let loose on everything, but or protect our bad habits. But you can start some good ones right now. It doesn't mean that you have to rearrange every single aspect, but if you do the evaluation on what might be holding you back, what might not be serving you in the same manner, start small, but start making some changes. You know there's a better life to be lived, but you can't seem to get there. It's over yonder, right? Whatever you're doing today is keeping you from getting to that next step. Visualize what you want and put yourself there. Once you put yourself there with some great detail, you're able to build a specific action plan. You know, if you're just going to say, I'm just going to try to do better, or I want to be more successful in 2, 5, 10 years, that's not really enough detail to be motivating. What is sabotaging your happiness? What are your obstacles, your roadblocks to get there? Want help getting out of that rut? Connect with your accountability partner. Remember, that's a partner who genuinely cares about you and wants to see you succeed. Tell them, hey, I'm having a lot of negative thoughts. I need some positive perspective. And they can get your talk track back on track. It's time for a change, and you deserve a change. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, be honest with yourself about mindless routines and bad habits that might be preventing you from reaching your goals. Visualize your life in 5 years and take action now, removing the barriers from hitting that timeline. Replace bad habits with healthy routines that bring out the best in you. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I